yesterday? Anyway, this is the breakout film of the festival, as far as I'm concerned.
Really? Oh, Jeffrey, I'm glad you felt that.
Scott Found is every big league critic that I've spoken to, and I've done a comprehensive canvassing. They're doing handstands.
Isn't that wonderful? I'm delighted because I don't have to tell you, it's not an easy movie. It's not a response I expected, you know. That's wonderful.
What I'm trying to figure is why the lowish profile, you know, usually a movie that's regarded by the festival programmers as special, plays in the first 5-6 days. And they're given this kind of a bum slot, and I don't get it.
I have no idea. I don't know how the festival is run. I've never had a picture here before.
Yeah.
Whatever's happened, I'm delighted. It's you know, we wound up with Think Film, which is, as you know, a very tiny distribution company.
Now, didn't Capital bought them?
They financed us before they bought them.
Right.
And they, you know, the usual, selling off territories in Europe and so on. Mm-hmm. And then finding a rich Indian someplace, I'm told. And that, in turn, and then they started expanding, just in general, making other permanent financing deals, or as permanent as those deals would be. And then they bought Think.
Yeah. That was about 5-6 months ago, right?
Yeah. And Mark Ehrman, who runs it, is sensational.
Mm-hmm.
He's smart, knows movies, cares about it, and is not afraid of problems.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, I don't know what his relationship was to the Toronto people, but this is pretty much the scheme he outlined to me.
Did you see when you read, this is a screenplay by a novice, correct?
I have no idea. I have never met the writer.
Because I read in her first screenplay. No, Roger Ebert, in his rave review, said it was her first.
My God. And,
Did you think Greek tragedy? Did you think Shakespeare? Did you think House of Borgia? These are the things I was getting from that.
Thought one hell of a melodrama. You know, melodrama has become so in such disrepute now it's stupid. I think it's happened because critics are snobbish about it.
Mm.
I mean, Hamlet is a pretty good melodrama. Not to mention Oedipus Rex. I mean, when Papa walks out there without his eyes, clutching his two little crying kids.
Mm.
And, you know, what melodrama really is, Jeff, is the things that we think, feel in the most secret way, and have swept under the carpet. And what melodrama is a story that pulls the carpet away.
Good analogy.
So why people have sort of made it a lesser form, I don't know it, and furthermore, I don't care. When I read this, I loved the story. The story was sensational. I must say I made one big improvement on it. I made them brothers. They were not brothers originally.
Uh-huh. They were what originally?
Friends.
Okay. Did they work together? Or
no, they knew each other from the bar.
Right.
But the value of the brother thing was that it quadrupled the intensity and also pulled it into a family story where suddenly every character was enmeshed with the other. Not just those two, but with the father, and with the mother, and with the wife. And all of a sudden, we got into this rat's nest of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that, by doubling the intensity, quadrupling the intensity like that.
The slap that Albert Finney gives to Philip Seymour Hoffman.
It's the heart of the picture, right there.
That it's surprising, and yet it kicks in immediately.
It's justified, which is what you want to do with a melodrama.
Yeah.
You take this outlandish behavior and say, Christ, what was... Oh, of course.
By the way, I'm told also that you added one of the the most startling opening scene in any film in the Toronto film. But that was your idea?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was brilliant. I just thought it was brilliant.
Because it seemed to me that...
Particularly Seymour Hoffman, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah,
you don't usually associate
with guys with fat asses also have sex, right?
That's right. Thank goodness for that.
Say that again. I thought, right, you would not know it because the scene itself would be so shocking that you'd never related to that. But as you thought back on the movie, you'd realize that's what motivates the whole bloody movie. That's what he wants and hasn't had. And which is what the movie is about. Nobody has what they want. And then keeps making one disastrous choice after another. Get it? You know, it's interesting that you put on the slap, Jeff, because that's, you're absolutely right. That's the, in a way, the climax of the movie. Because what that unleashes, what it unleashes, first of all, is his breakdown in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he even had crying fits like that as a child.
Yeah.
I think it's the first time in his life that he's ever allowed himself to go out of control. And he didn't allow himself, he couldn't help himself.
Yeah.
And there he is, next to his wife. And she said, in the scene before, and she says in the scene after, "You never talk to me, I never know what's going on with you."
Mm.
And then she says, "What was that in the car yesterday?" And when you see her in the car, and Marissa played it so brilliantly, she's practically trying to get out of the car. She can't bear it. Yeah. She can't look at him. She doesn't understand what's going on. She's terrified of it. And that's what she says she wanted all along. So all of a sudden, that whole family dynamic has been revealed. And that's good work.
When Marissa Tomei leaves him, he starts to do what I thought at first was going to be a Orson Welles, Charles Foster Kane, tearing the room apart thing.
Right.
And the brilliant part of it is that he stops and he picks up a large container of ornamental stones and pours them out bit by bit without, I thought it was so brilliant that he didn't smash everything.
Right.
He let that be the, that was.
And you know by what he picks,
yeah,
that it's all hers. He picks up a flower pot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Doesn't throw off, he sweeps off the makeup. And you know he hated those fucking pebbles since the decorator, since the first time the decorator walked in with them. And she said, "Oh, I love those."
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh, God."
Just shifting over really quickly, because they're going to kick me out of here in about 2 minutes. Well, how can, why did you choose The Best Years of Our Lives as something that I presume you believe echoes and reverberates in today's climate?
Well, the place where it echoes, me, is politically. I'm a World War II veteran. I'm that old. 4 years. And people can't believe there was such a thing as a good war.
Mm.
Between Korea and Vietnam and now this fiasco.
Yeah.
And I think what it's done is it's in many ways skewed our thinking. Because fascism will rise again, and a form of communism, and we are dealing with something which, when I was a kid, was impossible. It was impossible that religion would ever kill us. Religion was over, finished. And we see now that it's not. And the only place...
Religion on the Bush side, too. I mean, they believe that they're...
Oh, I'm including.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm including the Israeli fundamentalists.
Right. You know, a brilliant documentary just entered a really yeah. by Adam Curtis called The Power of Nightmares, that basically said that the Islamic fundamentalists, the jihadists, are cut from the same cloth as the Bush neocons.
And the Israeli
yeah.
settlers
right.
Who think it is their biblical right. Now that these people might kill us all, isn't that savage? So, at any rate, World War II, also shows you how vainglorious we are, because World War II, when that war ended, I thought, we solved it.
Mm.
I mean, I fully expected communism to collapse of its own on the inside. I knew enough of what was going on there. And there we'd be, marching in glorious future.
There's a, you know better than I, but I've seen Best Years of Life about 3 times on DVD. The scene at the very end when the alcoholic father is reading the citations of Dana Andrews, and the actress who plays Hortense, Embry, comes in, and he reads this letter of commendation about his son. And the way her face transforms and starts to gradually melt and gets more and more, one of the most moving things I've ever seen.
It's a great movie. It's a great American movie. That was Gladys George.
Yeah, Gladys George.
And the husband was Roman Bowman.
Did you ever know her?
No, but I knew him. And from the theater. And we're dealing with an American director who I think has never been acknowledged the way he should. God knows. He felt fine about it. He had a good career. But the general level of work, Jeff, is the highest of any American director. Picture after picture after picture. Nobody did more quality movies. Otherwise, others may have had perhaps one or two more great movies, but as a general level, nobody had a better level than Willie Wyler. He's, and I think the reason he's never been really acknowledged is because he was so commercially successful that it's very hard for certain kinds of movie snobs to admit that a commercially successful director could also be a great artist. And I think he was a great artist.
You know, when I saw Find Me Guilty, which is a complete surprise, because I gathered from the Yari people's selling of it that it was supposed to be some kind of jocular, lighthearted, you know, kind of personality comedy.
Right.
And I was, you know, I said, this is amazing. This is one of the best things I've seen all year. And that was a real tragedy that they sold it the way it did with that kind of, you know. But, and I was going to say, this is the best thing that Lumet's done since Prince of the City. But then I got to say, this is the best thing that you've done since Prince of the City, which, to everyone's great delight, it just came out on DVD on a double disc.
It did.
Yeah. And it looks great and everything.
Bastards, they haven't sent it to me yet. I'll check it out. Jeffrey, I've got to go. I'm due for a plane and the thing over there before.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very nice to have met
you. Love you.